tell my true love, but can't roll a wheel. I can't roll a wheel, but I can't roll a wheel.
Funding for Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer is provided by the Foundation at Hearst Castle, where donors and members experience exclusive events that recreate what it was like to be a guest of William Randolph Hearst, from swimming in the iconic Neptune Pool to dining in Hearst's private guesthouse overlooking the Pacific Ocean. The Foundation at Hearst Castle's ongoing mission is to support the conservation and restoration of Hearst Castle while offering youth programs for underserved students. Discover how you can become a member by going to foundation@hearstcastle.com and learn how you can support this unique and invaluable mission.
I'm correspondent Tom Wilmer reporting from Bristol, Virginia. Come along and join me for a conversation with Clint Hawley at the Ernest Tube Recording Studio. The Tube Studio is modeled on the legendary 1927 RCA Victor Bristol recording sessions. Engineers Clint Hawley and Dave Polster have perfected the craft of recording musicians live via pre-World War II recording technology. Utilizing minimal microphone placements, the Tube records are similar to how Alan Lomax and the 1927 RCA Victor staff recorded famed musicians such as the Carter Family and Jimmy Rogers. The Tube crew can also digitize musicians' lacquer recordings into high-resolution files for online sharing.
My name is Clint Hawley, and we're at the Ernest Tube in Bristol, Virginia.
Talk to us about the tube. What is it?
Well, obviously, the Ernest Tube is a play on Ernest Tubb.
I thought it was a typo at first.
The famous honky-tonk singer. So the way this all came together is I work in the vinyl reproduction industry as a mastering engineer, and we cut people's audio onto disc. And me and my partner have been doing that for 12 years. And we missed being in the studio with people, though. And so when an opportunity came for us to record people in the same way that we do our day-to-day job, it really was appealing, and we get to kind of bring our expertise in the disc cutting realm into the studio and give people an experience that's really kind of hard to find these.
So you have bands that come right in here?
Yeah, and we've done bands with some drums, five-piece string bands, a lot of singer-songwriter types. It lends itself to acoustic music, but I would love to see somebody come lay some beats down on the lacquers and use those as a basis for, some music. I'd like to see how somebody could take it into the future.
What's really interesting is, I've been to some old classic studios, Memphis and whatnot, and that's the first thing that struck me was this funky, non-high-tech atmospheric environment.
Right. Yeah, I mean, that was kind of what we wanted to go for. And, we try and tell people it's the essence of the 1927 Bristol sessions with modern insight. So we kind of tuck away some computers and we have a Pro Tools rig. I mean, you can't really survive in the recording world without some kind of digital these days, because if people want to share their music, it's got to be digital somehow. So in certain elements, we bring people's music off of those discs into the digital realm so they can use it on social media and streaming services.
Did you by chance go back in time and research the Bristol Sessions, what their perception of high tech was
right
at that time?
Yeah, I did a lot of reading. There's a great book. It's on my bookshelf over there. It's called Recording the 1920s, and it talks a lot about the rapid advance in technology in the 1920s. I mean, electrical recording, the idea that you could electrically power a microphone, was revolutionary in 1925. And, they started putting it on the records, like RCA called it, or Victor called it orthophonic sound. And the other labels said electrically recorded with lightning bolts and stuff like that. So, yeah, to them, what we use now was high tech then. And it's interesting because you say go back in time, because it is something that just keeps marching forward. And you have to keep incorporating the new things. But these old things, they give the music a certain sound. So if you want that sound, there's really only kind of one way to do it.
Yeah, we were talking earlier about people going back to vinyl.
Right.
And that, and the argument, I remember between DAT and... remember DAT?
Oh, yeah, I remember, yeah. And, the vinyl argument, I just say listen to whatever you enjoy. I like vinyl. I started collecting it as a young person. My parents were flea market people, and so I had a little money in my pocket from mowing people's yards and stuff. And in the 80s, everybody's getting rid of their records to go out and get CDs, and I was buying stacks of Neil Young records for 10 cents a piece. it was crazy when I think about it. And I never thought that it was something that how I would make my living, but I worked in the live music industry for a decade, and then a guy opened a pressing plant in Cleveland, Ohio called Gotta Groove Records, and I sent him my resume. And he didn't hire me, but he called me back and told me, he said, I'm going to visit this other studio that has this machine called a mastering lathe. And he said, I'm a production guy. I'm not an audio guy. Do you want to go with me? So I just looked at it as a way to get some brown noser points with him and like hopped in the car with him. And I saw this machine and I was fascinated. And they asked the guy that owned that studio if he wanted to be their in-house cutter, get cut jobs for Gotta Groove. And he said, no. And I went home and I told my wife about the day and she said, well, you should buy one of those machines. And it started this like 2-year odyssey of like finding one. It led me to a guy in New Jersey named Albert Grundy, who was at one point the president of the Audio Engineering Society. He started the first recording school in the United States in the early 1960s in New York City. Wow. He was instrumental in bringing Neumann lathes to the United States. And he told a great story about missing an opportunity. A company called Gotham, you've probably heard of Gotham Audio from the 60s and 70s. They started bringing in the Neumann stuff. But yeah, Al sold me my first mastering lathe in 2010. And I thought I was going to work like 2 or 3 days a week and be a house husband. And it totally got out of control. And now I have 3 employees, 2 mastering lathes, and we've cut probably over 10,000 albums in the course of the last 12 years.
But your mastering lathe is old school technology, correct?
Yeah. So we run a mastering lathe called a Neumann VMS-70, and that was the second to last generation. Their technology stayed the same about from the late 1940s, early 1950s, all the way through the early 1980s, and then they revamped their whole lathe lineup, and there was one called the VMS-80, which they only made about 35 of those machines, and then CDs came out, and
Game over.
Yeah. And this guy, Al Grundy, he would go to studios and offer to buy people's lathes. And they were giving them to him because the business had gotten so bad. And then he just stockpiled them and he would restore one every now and then and sell it off when he needed some money. He was 82 when I met him. And I happened to get the second to last machine he restored before he passed away.
Wow. Yeah. So one of the reasons people seek you out is to go back in time.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely a nostalgic quality to the whole vinyl resurgence, but then there's also people who weren't even alive when the first golden age of vinyl ended, say 1990, 1991, somewhere around that era. The kids love it because it's tactile. You know, you get the artwork, you got to flip the record over, you got to put the tone arm on it, and it's just different than dialing something up on your
when you read the notes too.
Yeah, and you read the liner notes, and that's how I got fascinated with recording, like by saying, oh, who's this guy that whose name keeps showing up on these records, like, you know, who's Bob Ludwig, and who's, you know, these people, that why is their name on all these records? And then you start digging in and you learn the history, and that's taking you back in time too, because you learn about all these people that did, you know, all these amazing things.
How do people find you? Is it mostly word of mouth?
We do a lot of word of mouth, and we're on all the social media like everybody else. It's Well Made Music is the mastering business, and the Earnest Tube is the studio, the disc cutting studio. Wellmademusic.net is the website for the mastering business, and the earnesttube.com is for the Earnest Tube.
So Earnest Tube is out of the house.
Right. 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 And funny enough, I have a picture in the bathroom of Earnest Tubb with the guitar that says thanks. And that guitar is currently over in the Birthplace of Country Music Museum, because that was Jimmy Rogers' guitar made by Martin. And right now it's on display until March.
I saw that, and it has the thanks on the back.
Yeah, and so the whole tie-in with Earnest Tubb, Jimmy Rogers, Bristol, it makes this kind of, you know, great circle that we want to talk about the history, and we want to see people, you know, push this into the future. Like, what can we do with this to continue to make it interesting?
That's right. I love it, the timeless technology.
Yeah, it is in a way, and there's certain cool things that just are always cool. Art Deco, Art Nouveau, there's just certain things that are classic, and I think records, they're classic.
Awesome. Thanks for sharing. To learn more about your world,
yeah,
go to website, social media.
I would suggest all our social media, the Earnest Tube and Well Made Music on Instagram, Facebook. Instagram is really good for us because kids are collecting these crazy colored variants of records these days, these handmade, they call them wax mage pressings with colors and translucent and all that. So Instagram's a great avenue to find out more about Well Made Music, because we post a lot of that stuff because they work at Gotta Groove in Cleveland. And my name is Clint Holly.
Thank you so much. And I'm Tom Wilmer.
The storms are on the ocean. The heaven may cease to be. This world may lose its motion. Love if I perform.
Funding for Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer is provided by the Foundation at Hearst Castle, where donors and members experience exclusive events that recreate what it was like to be a guest of William Randolph Hearst, from swimming in the iconic Neptune Pool to dining in Hearst's private guest house overlooking the Pacific Ocean. The Foundation at Hearst Castle's ongoing mission is to support the conservation and restoration of Hearst Castle while offering youth programs for underserved students, preserving the past and inspiring future generations of dreamers. These children experience a world of science, technology, engineering, art, and math at Hearst Castle, STEAM, along with studying the legacy of Julia Morgan, one of the most important women in the history of engineering and architecture. The Foundation at Hearst Castle not only changes the lives of children, but also provides lifetime memories and unrivaled experiences for our generous donors and members. Discover how you can become a member by going to foundation@hearstcastle.com and learn how you can support this unique and invaluable mission. You've been listening to the Lowell Thomas award-winning travel show Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer, a featured podcast on NPR.org's podcast directory. Produced by California Central Coast NPR affiliate KCBX. You are invited to subscribe to Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer on NPR.org, NPR One, iTunes, Stitcher.com, and more than 20 other podcast channels around the world. To learn more about Tom Wilmer's journeys around America and the world, log on to thomaswilmer.com.
This is Roseanne Cash, and I'm sitting here with Tom Wilmer. Please support your local NPR station.
I listen to WNYC in New York, and in fact, NPR is all I listen to. If I didn't have NPR, I would feel like my lifeline to the world has been cut. So, yes, please support your local NPR station.
Pretty Polly, Pretty Polly, would you think it unkind? Pretty Polly, Pretty Polly, would you think it unkind? Me to sit down beside you and tell you my mind. I called it Pretty Polly, won't live long night. I called it Pretty Polly, won't live long night, and left the next morning before it was light. I led her over the hill through the valley so deep. I led her over the hill through the valley so deep, at last Pretty Polly beginning to weep. Come on, Pretty Polly, and go along with me. Come on, Pretty Polly, and go along with me. Before we get married, some pleasure to see. Oh, Willie, sweet Willie, I fear from your way. Oh, Willie, sweet Willie, I fear from your way. The way you are rounding is leading me astray. She went up before there, see what she could find. She went up before there, see what she could find. A new dove grave and a spade line by. Had no time to study, no time there to stand. Had no time to study, no time there to stand. He stood with a knife through all in his right hand. Pretty Polly, Pretty Polly, you guessing just right. Pretty Polly, Pretty Polly, you're guessing just right. I dug on your grave 6 long hours of last night. She threw her arms round him and suffered no fear. She threw her arms round him and suffered no fear. How can you kill a girl that loves you so dear? He stabbed her to the heart, her heart's blood, it did flow. He stabbed her through the heart, her heart's blood, it did flow. And into the grave, Freddy Fallin did go. Oh, Willie, sweet Willie, turn loose on my hand. Willie, sweet Willie, turn loose on my hand. You see my heart's blood puddling around where you stand. He threw some dirt over her and turned to go home. He threw some dirt over her and turned to go home, leaving nothing behind him but the bird is to mourn. Dear gentlemen and ladies, I bid you farewell. Gentlemen and ladies, I bid you farewell, for killing Fred Folly, you send my soul to hell.